Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are hard to predict, sometimes even hard to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm also doing great, doing very good.
I see in the chat room that Sally has sound this week, so we're way ahead of that.
Absolutely. We are 100% better than last week already. And, you know, since I've got some pretty good music lined up, you know, that's another plus two. So
now, don't tell me you popped last week. You've got better music than we have.
Well, you know, one good thing about, you know, having sort of an off music is that you've set the bar low enough that, you know, no matter what I do, I'm improving. I'm on like an upward climb now. See, so, anyway.
Do you remember my paranormal Christmas song that I recorded a couple years ago?
Yeah.
You could play that, and it would sound good, okay? That's how bad that thing was. Okay.
It was a paragon of badness. That was just about as bad as it could possibly be. And
Stephen,
it was
tonight you could play you and I singing Happy Birthday to PJ, and it would be better. Okay, that's how bad that was last week.
I don't know. You know, that was pretty bad, though.
I am scraping the bottom of the barrel looking for other comparisons, but I think I've made my point. So, yeah, very much looking forward to hearing our palate cleansing music this week. Although I got to say, I thought that song was really funny. I enjoyed it. I think it was in that category of so bad it's good or close to that. What do you think?
Well, yeah, you know, what was interesting is that the lyrics were actually somebody who spent some time putting some thought to it. And, you know, you can imagine them, you know, okay, now let's put this to music and let's get somebody who can really sing good. And they go, oh, no. Let's sing this as bad as possible. It's almost like they were trying, you know, to make it as if that would be part of the comedy. I'm not sure what was going on there, but that particular group, Fump, I believe they put out comedy stuff all the time. And they're capable of great music, you know.
They probably were just trying to make it sound like a fanboy really singing his heart out, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was meant to be kind of a karaoke kind of fanboy, you know, having fun with Serenity kind of thing. But anyway, now we're going to make everybody go back and hear this thing, you know. I mean, now that we've talked about it for
I imagine
seconds.
We've created some curiosity for some people, yeah. If you didn't listen to last week's show all the way to the end. I'm not recommending it, but, you know, there it is.
Yeah.
Curiosity
like
may get the better
space,
of you.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes things are so bad, you just have to experience it, you know. So, anyway, there you go.
Well, we've got one of our favorite topics this evening. We're going to be talking about practical time travel, a concept that I believe I coined. I think I'm responsible for the phrase practical time travel. Some years ago, probably right when the Speculist first started, and it's something we revisit from time to time at the Speculist, and it's something we hit, we were saying before the show, what, about once a year on Fast Forward Radio, we do a show about practical time travel. And for those not familiar with the concept, we will be outlining it. I did give a little bit of a clue as to how practical time travel works with the two pictures of my older daughter, Hannah, and myself that I put up on the put up on the website. That shows time travel in action right there. I this is my second consecutive show now talking about the fact that my daughter graduated from college. I guess I'm just a proud dad. I keep relating it to everything, but
that's okay. That's a cool thing to be proud of.
Well, you know, summa cum laude.
Congratulations to Hannah, by the way.
Thank you. She really outdid herself and couldn't be more proud.
Of course, after killing that Sith in your garage, it's a sort of anything anticlimactic after that. But still,
that's true. Hannah's major exploits have played out over the years on the Speculous. I forgot about that video. That's interesting because I shouldn't even say why that's interesting. Never mind. We're gonna step quickly away from that.
okay.
On the unlikely chance she listens. Which she might, because her picture's on the in the announcement this week. Anyway, so what you see there is you see two people, and it's interesting. I didn't have to reverse the photos or anything. She's on the left. I'm on the right, and I believe that was right around her sixth birthday. And then we see 16 years later, her college graduation. So almost exactly 16 years elapsed between the two. And this is the progression from the present to the future. This is time travel. Now, was this practical time travel? Well, we're going to get into that. But before I do, one of the teasers that we put into the description of the show this week is that practical time travel is the one method of time travel that really works and that is available to all of us. Now, Stephen, are you on board with me that that's an apt description of practical time travel?
Absolutely. It's
okay.
I don't want to steal your thunder too much, because the concept is actually a lot more profound than just every day you wake up one day in the future. There's more to the concept than that. So, let's just launch into it, Phil. What makes this more profound than every day I get up and I'm one day further into the future?
We'll get to that. Actually, the reason I was asking you that was just because I think we might get some grief back from our. From our commenter on my What's Beyond the Universe post, who accused me of doing a Monster Quest thing with What's Beyond the Universe. Now, for those unfamiliar with Monster Quest, the show, one of my favorite shows. I don't get to watch it much anymore, but I've always enjoyed it because they deal with Bigfoot and werewolves and chupacabra and monsters. But nothing ever actually happens, right? There's always a huge buildup, and they send out the team, and then nothing, right? So his take on my post on What's Beyond the Universe was that I was leading to something really huge, and of course, in that post, I was saying that apparently there's something out there, but we have no idea what it is, and that's really all you can say. I mean, it might be another universe, or it could be something we just can't even imagine, but that's really all you can say.
I've got an idea.
Go. What do you got?
I read on fizorg.com. There's an article just came out this week. Also, new theory suggests that some black holes might predate the Big Bang. They call them primordial black holes that actually were present at the time. Were already there and huge and present at the time of the Big Bang. The Big Bang happens, and they're just sort of subsumed into the rest of the universe. And some of these black holes are maybe just extremely huge, and maybe that's what we're seeing.
So it could be massive primordial black holes out there beyond the edge. In fact, they wouldn't even then need to be beyond the edge of the visible universe, because we couldn't see them anyway if they're black holes, right?
That's right. They're black holes. The
thing is, all these galaxies are rushing at an inordinately high rate of speed towards someplace. We don't know where. We know the direction, but we don't know towards what. Apparently, something exerting a tremendous gravitational pull on them. And that's an interesting observation. That's way to track the latest breaking news, Stephen, and make it relevant. That's kind of cool. So it could be primordial black holes. Could be a whole other Big Bang getting ready to happen right outside our universe.
Right.
Could be, as I noted, a large ape man, you know, a really, really big one.
That's right.
That you know, there's a non-zero chance that it's that. But I think primordial black hole is a bit more likely. And also just that it's something we have no idea what it is more likely. You know, it could be dark energy. It could be some exotic thing that we just don't even have any category for whatsoever. But the point is, I was not in a position to say what it was, and therefore he called foul on me. Now we're going to talk about practical time travel, which has the really exotic sounding phrase time travel in it, but is buffered somewhat by the word practical. So I don't want to be accused of doing a bait and switch here. Practical time travel is completely practical. It's not just time travel. It's completely practical. So that's my caveat for those listening. And, of course, people who are familiar with fast-forward radio and who've heard us talk about this before know where we're going with this. But before we talk about practical time travel, I always like to start off talking about the impractical kind, the kind we're all familiar with from TV and the movies and from books, and that is impractical, regular time travel, moving rapidly ahead in time, moving backward in time. Now, let me ask you a question, Stephen. I don't know if we've talked about this in a while. Would you do that if you could, and would you have a preference where you'd go, forward or back?
Would I do it or not? I would want to. I think I would want to go forward, though, rather than backward. I'd be really interested in finding out what's going on about 30 or 40 years from now. It'd be nice to know now, you know, not have to wait 30 or 40 years. So
that would be, yeah. I'd love to go. I'd love to move ahead 40 years and see what's going to happen. One of my favorite, like, if you're throwing these like hard questions around, right? You have to pick between these two things. In fact, I should have phrased it to you this way. Forget that earlier question, Stephen. Here's your choice, okay? You can either move ahead 500 years or back 500 years, but you've got to go and you're going to stay. Which will you do?
And, oh boy!
If you move ahead 500 years, let me qualify that. If you move ahead 500 years, you're right where you are. If you go back 500 years, you can go anywhere you want to go.
Oh, okay. Well, I was about to say, if I have to stay right where I am right now, 500 years ago,
yeah, you'll
be in the middle of the Native Indians right here, and I wouldn't have much of a shot of making it. I wouldn't imagine I'd be a pretty strange looking fellow to them. I think I'd still go forward into the future. Where I am right now wouldn't be a terrible place to be. Moving forward 500 years.
You just don't know, right? I mean,
that's true. You just don't know. I'm
the thing about 500 years from now, you don't know if there's even going to be a 500 years from now. But I would bet that there is, and I would bet that where I am right now is going to be fine, because I know that there's no place on Earth that I actually want to be 500 years ago.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, there's no place I want to land and try to work my way into that society and feel like I'm going to have a good life. I mean, even if I go in speaking the language and I know all kinds of tricks and it's like Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court or something like that, that's not a world you want to live in, right? They don't have – forget about the fact that they don't have podcasts and blogs and iPhones. You know, they don't have anesthesia, right?
antibiotics.
They don't have antibiotics. They don't have what we would recognize as personal hygiene.
They don't have a germ theory of disease.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, that would lead them to want to be hygienic. You know, I mean, it's
right. I think when people are presented that question, what they answer is that they'd like to go back and be in a movie about that time, right?
they don't really want to be in that time. They want to be in the fantasy that we have of that time. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sally mentioned medieval dentistry.
There you go. Yeah. Would you really want to subject yourself to that? For one thing, once they looked inside my mouth, they would assume I'm a witch or something because I got all these fillings and crowns and all this kind of stuff. But
you're at your advanced age and have teeth, you know, at all.
Exactly. Well, I'd have to lie about my age. I have to say I'm like 27 or something. And
exactly. And you could pass for 27 500 years ago.
that's the point. Yeah. I'd be pretty well preserved for a 27-year-old. That's the trick. So anyway, we would both prefer to move ahead, but some people actually genuinely would like to go back in time and see things. I mean, there's certain historical things that would be cool to see. People would like to go back and witness the crucifixion or other major historical events like that. So what are our chances of ever doing that? Right. That's the question.
Well, I would say that our chances of going back in time are small. I've read some things recently about how wormholes and things like that could potentially be used to do something like that. The amount of energy involved would be incredible. The requirements to do something like that are just, completely. It's either completely unfeasible or practically unfeasible.
The word impractical is the moniker I've stuck on it. We're talking about extremely impractical. Okay, we're talking about a level of engineering that is far beyond anything we're capable to do. I mean, there's a wonderful book, and I can never remember the author's name, but it's How to Build a Time Machine, and it talks about how you could make your own wormhole and move back through time, and the physics and the math it all supports that. But we're a long way away from being able to harness that kind of technology, even to move ahead in time, in the impractical way. And by the impractical way, I mean to get to the future faster than everybody else, right? That's the trick to impractical time travel, because we're all moving to the future. As you mentioned earlier, we get there one day at a time. One day at a time. How did I get 16 years into the future? Well, I did it by passing through 16 years. I subjectively experienced 16 years, and here I am. And now my daughter's a college graduate. But
well, you
in
talked
the movies,
about your retirement. You talked about your retirement cruise, Phil. You're going to want to describe that. That's probably the most practical way to move forward in time faster than one day at a time.
That's right. That is the theoretically supported way of getting to the future faster. Now, there's no way, again, since we've established it's really hard to get back to the past. Once you're there, you're there. It's not like you get back in the DeLorean and change the dials and then you go 80 miles an hour and you get to come back. But you can move ahead. And the way you move ahead, and this has been proven. This is theoretically possible, and in fact, it has been proven by astronauts in space moving at a slightly greater speed. Apollo astronauts going to the moon established that time slows down as you accelerate. Now, you've got to way accelerate to get any advantage out of this. But if you had a really fast rocket, okay, and you're going to fly, say you're going to go, 30 light years to another star system. You're going to get in a rocket, and it's going to accelerate at 1G, okay? So for those who don't know off the top of their heads, that's 32.174 feet per second per second. That's the acceleration rate of gravity. So now we're taking gravity, and we're accelerating out into space at that rate. So that's a rapid, rapid acceleration, and you're going to just tear ass out into space going at 1G. 32, you're going to fly 30 light years away. What's going to happen is about 7 years will pass for you subjectively, and 25 years will have passed on Earth. So, 32 years will have passed on Earth. So the time you get back to Earth, you will have subjectively traveled 25 years into the future, because although it's in the future to you, you're far ahead of where you should have been. And that's what I described in my retirement cruise. Basically, you take that same principle. You take a very fast moving spaceship and go deep, deep, deep into deep space. You can have a subjective time, even accelerating just at 1G, of 2, 3, 4 years, maybe 10 years, something like that. And you can come back and tens of thousands of years will have passed on Earth. You can move massively into the future. Now, once again, you don't have an option of traveling back, but you can move into the future. It is possible to do that. It's just not very practical because the real problem is getting that spaceship that will just constantly accelerate at 1G for years and years and years. To do the thought experiment I just gave, the one where we go 30 light years, or excuse me, yeah, when we travel for 7 years of subjective time, that would take about the equivalent of 100,000 to 1,000,000 Saturn V rockets. Thrust.
Yeah.
Forward. Okay. So we're talking about that capability just doesn't.
Traditional rocketry is just not, it wouldn't work for something like that. You'd have to have warp drive or something. You'd need some non-traditional propellant, wouldn't you?
You would need some very exotic technology to get you that far in the future. So that is it. Those are our options for impractical time travel. They're meager. I think there's a much better chance for us moving ahead than back. I think if we ever see time travel occur, it will be people moving ahead. I think it's a long theoretical road to moving back in time. But that's time travel. It is possible. Theoretically possible.
We shouldn't leave this subject without mentioning the super collider. The thought was that when that came online, that could be a landing pad in a way for time travelers from the future coming to our present time. So far, as far as I know,
none have shown.
Not been visited by anybody from the future yet. As a result of the collider. So there you are.
And that is, and I thank you for pointing that out, because that is another one of the drawbacks that's pointed out to traveling back in time. One line of thought around that suggests that you'll only ever be able to travel back to the day you built the time machine.
Yeah.
So it's not like you'll ever be able to build a time machine and then go back 1,000 years. If you build a time machine and manage to live 1,000 years, then you can come back 1,000 years to the day you built the time machine. But that's its set point. That's as far back in time as it's ever going to let you go. And that has to do with the closed loop wormholes, which we won't get into. We won't get into all that physics because, frankly, we don't understand it very well. The bottom line is.
In a way, Phil, time travel to the past has its own Fermi paradox, doesn't it? If it's possible, where are all the visitors from the future?
Right.
So, now,
if Michael Darling were with us, he would say Tesla.
Exactly, yeah.
His argument is
that
Tesla
guy obviously
was
from the future. Exactly. And perhaps Leonardo da Vinci.
That's the other name that often comes up, yeah. And Stephen Gordon, of course. How do you account for that guy? There's no way. So much for impractical time travel. Now we're going to talk about what we can do, and what we can do is more than we give ourselves credit for, because we are constantly moving through time. We do it. We do it every day. We are moving to the future, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Every moment of your life, you are getting closer and closer to the future, or you're actually moving into the future with each passing moment. So it's really a remarkable thing. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and it's non-trivial now. Maybe 500 years ago, you could live a lifetime with nothing really of consequence changing much from the time you were born until the time you died. It's another thing, another reason I wouldn't want to go 500 years into the past. I mean, I'd be bored silly, but in this time, I mean, it seems like we don't go two or three days without, thousands of things happening. I mean, we just, you can't keep up with all of it.
That's right. That's part of the problem going to the past is you know how it comes out. Unless unless you're in a position to really mess with things, which would be fun, and then you can, you can see what the scenario, how things are going to play. You go back in time and kill Hitler, right? And then you get to watch the rest of the 20th century if he gets taken out at a young age or something like that. But basically, if you go back prior to the Industrial Revolution, before we started hitting the knee of the curve of acceleration for technological change and all of the social upheaval that has resulted from that. Yeah, there were long, long periods of time when things were pretty staid, where the great-great-great-great-grandchild's life was not terribly different from that great-great-great-great-great-grandparent's life. Things just weren't happening that fast, and you couldn't really see the passage of time. I mean, obviously, you could see it within individual lives. People age, you know, significant events happen in their lives, but in the world at large, not so much. There wasn't that much going on. Compare that to what's happened since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, accelerated by the beginning of the computer age, accelerated again by the introduction of the World Wide Web, and we see increasing, rapid, fundamental changes occurring all the time, more than we can keep up with. I mean, one of our examples that we always bring up is just breakthroughs in cancer alone, right? Because those are always so attention-getting, or they should be attention-getting. Actually, they're a lot less attention-getting than we feel they ought to be, because cancer was the scourge of humanity for so long. And in my lifetime, first few decades of my lifetime, nothing ever much happened for it. And now, if you wanted to, I think we could have a weekly feature called This Week's Big Cancer Breakthrough. We should probably do that, actually. We should probably just every week track the big thing that has occurred towards curing cancer. And you multiply that on your Spock's chessboard, Stephen. You multiply that by every possible sphere of influence, every possible sphere of experience that we have, and that's how fast time is moving now. Time is moving much more rapidly. So even though we're only getting a day at a time, we're getting a lot more out of those days. And even though we're getting a year at a time, we're getting a lot more out of those years. And the amount of change that we can expect to live through is pretty remarkable compared to what our ancestors could have.
Well, you don't even have to be someone who subscribes to, the theory of the singularity to understand that. I mean, for people like Phil and I who really make it, a serious effort to keep up, Phil, it seems like I did better keeping up with things when you and I were first beginning to do the Speculus together, then I can keep up with it now. It's just not as possible anymore. It seems like things are happening faster now.
Either things are happening faster, or there's so many more people aware of it, keeping better track of it than we are, that we really see what our shortcomings are.
Yeah,
because when I go to particularly on Facebook, when I go to the Singularity group, or when I go to Accelerating Future, or when I go to Next Big Future, two of my favorite blogs, I'm just blown. I'm trying to keep up with this stuff, and I'm blown away by the things that we see happening. And you see them from increasingly surprising sources, people that you didn't expect to be telling you something interesting about the future. You know, you see it increasingly in the political blogs. You see it in mainstream media sources. The whole discourse, I think, has become kind of overwhelmed by the number of changes that are occurring. Everybody's become kind of the speculist. I think the mainstream media today is kind of like what the speculist was 8 years ago when we started it. Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration.
Beginning to understand,
but not too far. Yeah.
A lot of the mainstream guys still look at people like Kurzweil or people like that with a certain degree of they don't buy it all.
Skepticism, absolutely.
Yeah, they're looking at it with skepticism, but it seems like increasingly they're saying, he's got a point regarding these things, and oh, by the way, he's this genius that's done all these great things, and he's done a pretty good job of tracking trends so far. So, while he might be a little out to lunch with some of his more bizarre things, we should still keep up. We should still listen to him. That's basically kind of the default position for much of media when they deal with Kurzweil. That He's awesome. He has some pretty wild ideas, but we probably should listen to some of the things he says at least. So
that's right. That's right. And, yeah. and a few years from now, I think it will have turned even farther, and he'll be kind of a go-to guy for this kind of stuff. And a few years after that, he'll be the conservative guy. And right, there will be these really radical.
I would love that. I would love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Transhumanists, given the really edgy.
Yeah. Exactly. I want to live to see the time when Kurzweil is the one who's the conservative on the issue of the future.
Well, and you know who the radical will be? It'll be Ramona. She'll be sitting across the table from him, going, "No, that's not. Here's how it's going to be."
Yeah, his alter ego will have taken over at that point.
Yeah, his AI alter ego will take over the role of radical for him. So that's all true. I think that the fact that there's more going on helps us to effectively travel through time. But I do think we can travel through time, and it's not just a matter of experiencing the passage of time. It's a matter of directing our course through that passage of time. Because although we cannot, quote-unquote, travel to the future, we can, in fact, travel to a future. We can travel to a chosen future, to a particular future, if we make the right decisions. And the notion of practical time travel is predicated on the idea that, yes, we have free will, and that, yes, we're able to make rational decisions and to change our lives as individuals and as society and as a civilization. So practical time travel is, in fact, another way of saying the human imperative. It's another way of describing this transformative process that we have always gone through as individuals and as a species to get ourselves to the next stage. But I think it's helpful to view it as traveling through time, because that's really what's going to happen. I remember many years ago I was reading an advice column. It must have been Ann Landers or Dear Abby or one of them. And this guy was writing in, and he's in his, I think, like mid-30s, late-30s, might have been older than that even. And he can't decide if he should go to medical school or not. And he's explaining the whole thing to her, and he says, "So you see what's going to happen if I do this and I do this, I do this, and then I'll be 50, and I'll just then be becoming a doctor." And you know what the answer was? I thought this was great wisdom from whichever one of those two gave the advice.
I have no idea what was said to him.
The answer was, I think I started thinking of practical time travel when I read this. The answer was, yes, and if you don't go to medical school, you'll still be 50.
That's right. You'll be Mr. So and So rather than
You'll be 50 and not a doctor. Do you get it now? Do you see what's happening? So
it's not like you trade those years in, and bang, you're immediately a doctor. You get to live those years anyway while you're becoming a doctor.
You've got to live those years anyway. The question is, where are you going to be at the end of those years? Right? Where are we going to, what use are we going to make of the time that we have? That's what practical time travel is all about. It's all about saying, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, John Smart touched on that issue when we had him on. It's been a while now, but he said that we don't ever, futurists never talk, they try not to talk about the future. The field of study is called futures study. It's always plural. And, right. And the idea is that we don't have one future sitting out there. We don't have one destiny. The Terminator, we learned there is no fate, but what we make. We have an influence on how these things happen. And so, even if we didn't have an influence on it, we can't definitely know how all the things that are happening around us, even right now, will interact to bring us the future. So basically what you end up doing with future study is you study scenarios, you study possibilities of, this is likely to happen, this is likely to happen, and if those things happen, then how will they interact to, create the next paradigm? And so you don't talk about one single future out there. You talk about possibilities, really, and our interaction with that.
And one of my favorite methodologies for approaching the future is actually the Global Business Network. Peter Schwartz, The Art of the Long View, the scenario-based planning. the idea of try to identify those alternatives, those options that might make the most sense, and that represent not just some straightforward extrapolation of trends, but a realistic grouping of outcomes that might reflect where the future is really going. And I think we can do this for our lives, and I think it's important that we do that we choose a future for ourselves. Not to say that we get to choose, because you don't. For all the reasons you just said, there is tremendous randomness in the system. There's tremendous randomness in the world. There is also all the perfectly intentional things that other people do, right? And all of that is going to interact with our plans. Plus, we change, and then our desires change, and what we choose as our future changes. But if we don't start out intentionally, there's no way we're going to end up intentionally. If we don't start out saying, well, I would like a future that involves these elements, that has me in this place, that has me with these people, or that has me doing these things. If we're not thinking about those things, then it's going to be much harder to arrive at that future.
Yeah.
And so I think the first thing we have to do is pick a future, or pick a reasonable groupings of future. I can look at myself and say, okay, well, 25 years from now, I'd like to be, you know, rich and retired and living in Florida, or I'd like to be rich and retired and still living here in Colorado, or, you know, I'd like to be rich and retired and living in Hawaii. You see how that's working? So
rich and retired seems to be a big part of the future you would like to have.
Yeah, you know, it's like certain things are going to vary, and certain things you're going to want to stick with. Now, those are just personal details of my life. That says nothing about the specific things I'd like to do. And in fact, I don't want to be retired. That's a silly example, because I want to keep working. I want to keep doing the kinds of things we do here forever. I have no shelf life on doing this kind of stuff. But in order to choose those futures, I think you have to start thinking about where you'd like to end up over a certain period of time, and then you need to kind of go there. And by that I mean you need to go to that future mentally. You need to model that future, and based on what you've learned about yourself, based on what you've learned about what's happening, you need to test and revise that picture of the future. And then step four is you need to live to see it. You need to make each day, make a part of each day, the process of getting to that particular future. And
hey, I've got an idea.
I don't want to interrupt
your thought too much there, Phil. But we might want to take a moment and just think about the things that we have talked about over the years, and how we've already lived to see some things, some interesting things. And often it's funny, we'll be talking about something one week, and by the next week, you know, we've even seen things where it was like, we make some sort of way out prediction, or even in joking say something, and then, you know, it's a reality within a few weeks. It's hilarious. We've seen that sort of thing.
Well, absolutely. One of the great discoveries for me in playing these archive shows on Monday nights has been to think, wow, yeah, we were predicting that when this show started, or we were predicting that stuff back when and that's just 3 years ago, right? Predicting that stuff back when the Speculus started, and now here it is. It's actually come about. The one that comes to mind for me immediately, and I don't know if you were thinking of this one, so I don't mean to jump on it if you were, but the self-driving car.
I wasn't. That's a great example.
When we started this show, we talked in the future about how there would be a car that could drive itself in traffic. It would be an artificially intelligent driven vehicle that would that would be capable of surviving, right? Not crashing, being assigned a route and carrying out that route in city traffic and normal traffic conditions, and with no human assistance, to be able to get from wherever it needs to go to wherever it needs to go. That was the future 3 years ago when we started this show, and that is something Google did, what, a year ago?
Yeah. I remember I did a post, it was probably about 2004, 2005, and it was entitled Batman's Utility Belt. And I was kind of making fun of the guy that had the pager, and he also had the cell phone, and he had maybe they had the he might even have an iPod or some sort of MP3 player, and who knows, he might have a pedometer, you know, that could keep up with his steps he walks, and you know, he had all these gadgets, you know, and you know, I just laughed and said, you know, you might as well have a utility belt like Batman to carry all the things that I would like to have on me all the time. Wouldn't it be great if we had one device that could do all those things? I think I may have even mentioned an e-reader, too. But, of course, now, you know, that's a pretty good description of what a smartphone is. It can do
exactly
all those things.
That was like 05 you wrote that, right?
Yeah. Well, was it 05 or 04? It was one of the.
Might have been 04.
It was one of the first, you know, it was towards the beginning of writing for the Speculus. You know, also, I talked about, you know, about wanting to get an e-reader at some point where I would be able to get all my books, you know, and I wondered how long into the future would it be before I stopped buying books, essentially, new books at least, on paper. And I've already arrived there. I mean, I've probably been a year or two since I bought a new book on paper. Now, you know, you walk past a bargain bin and see something in a bargain bin, I'll pick it up. But when it comes to new books, I buy it digitally because I can carry it with me everywhere. It's always on my phone. It's also on my computer. And any other digital device I have, I can pull up and read the book. And it even keeps track of where I'm at in the book, you know, and I can, you know, share notes and thoughts with other people. It's, you know, it's just, there's lots to be said for it. There's downsides, yes, but there's lots to be said for having books that way. And so,
well, and that leads to another one that's kind of come true as we've done, which is our bet. My bet was that e-books would become tremendously popular, but that they wouldn't hurt the print book market. And we've seen what Borders is going out of business. I mean, you and I have a $1 bet on that. Is that right? It wasn't more than a dollar.
At some point, I'm going to ask for my $1. I'll probably show up to get it in person. You know,
I don't know. Print books could still make a comeback. This could just be a temporary slop, but we'll see what happens. But no, actually, I think I acknowledged I lost the bet when we were talking on the show the other night, and I said, "Yeah, I need to download that book." It never even occurred to me that I'd go to a bookstore and buy a print copy. At that point, I think.
Well, you know, Spock gives Kirk at the beginning of Star Trek II, what does he do? He gives him a paper book. But, of course, it was meant to be an antique, wasn't it?
That's right. Now, do you remember what the book was?
Tale of Two Cities.
Very good, Stephen.
Yeah, I know.
I'm
pleased
that you...
That's a losing battle.
That you would remember that. So I agree. I think that it's important that we visit the future. That's what we do on this program. It's what we do at The Speculist, is we actually engage those possibilities. If you don't at least try to do that, I mean, imagine 20, 25 years ago, computers were already part of my life at that point, and I could kind of see what was happening. You know, for a lot of people, that hadn't hit yet. You know, it was not something they were thinking about.
It was a typewriter replacement for years.
Exactly.
That was all it was. You know?
Yeah.
It was just a slightly better typewriter.
Yeah. How pervasive those have become in our lives. If you're looking ahead, you can start to see that, and you can start to map out possibilities based on that. It's not that you're going to make a completely accurate prediction of what you're going to be doing, but you know, you were better off trying to imagine your future life with a concept of the smartphone in your head before the smartphone arrived than somebody who didn't have that idea, who's just completely taken by surprise by it. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, visit the future and start to see what parts of your idea about what's going to happen work with what's really going to be showing up. And I think this is important not just for us as individuals, but this becomes important for us as a society too. This is kind of key to how we get to the future, how we get to the future as a group. And Brian Wong and I were swapping emails on this subject. He's going to be one of our guests on The World Transformed 2, and he was responding to, I think, the last or the second to last show, which talks about the future that we just can't predict. Talk about the singularity, but ultimately, you know, this point beyond which we can't make predictions. And one of the things Brian said really caught my attention. He says, we can do a far better job of projecting what is happening and what will happen. More work on figuring out what is causing things to happen now, that we need to do that work now, because and I'm sure Brian would agree that ultimately there's this singularity, there's this point beyond which we can't, but there's a lot that we can anticipate. There's a lot that we can imagine, and the better equipped we are to do that, the stronger we're going to be in terms of putting together a plan for ourselves, for our future, that's going to work.
Absolutely. I got another example.
Oh, go. What do you got?
You know how we talked recently about it's basically Cory Doctorow's idea of WOFI, use of credits within a social network as an important form of currency in the future. You know, I on my way home from work, I check Facebook. I see that there's a shut-in that needs some groceries. I stop and be a good Samaritan, take some groceries to a shut-in I may or may not even know. And then I'm rewarded on, you know, the social network of the times, maybe it's Facebook, maybe it's something entirely new, with some form of whoopee, some form of recognition that can actually be cashed in for other things. And I see one little potential part of it in a story that I read this week. Soft drink maker delivers social technology with drinks from vending machines. Have you heard about this, Bill?
No. Go.
Okay. All right. Okay. It's a Pepsi machine that you go to, and you can of course buy your own Pepsi. But let's say I'm thinking, you know, Phil had a great show. I mean, I just enjoyed having that having that conversation with Phil the other night. That was a great show. He deserves a Pepsi for that one. And I can record a video message to you, Phil, and say, Phil, I bought you a Pepsi. Here's the code for it. Great show. Had a great time, Steven. And then I shoot it to you. You get that message. You go to your local Pepsi social vending machine.
Yeah.
And you get your Pepsi. And you can do things like pay it forward. You could buy the next person that comes up to the machine a Pepsi, and you're rewarded with certain points and things like that within their social network. I think it's pretty interesting. I don't think it's the whole picture yet, but it may be a piece or a part of what's coming.
Well, absolutely, you can see that occurring based on the social relationships that people have. And I think to your point, the reputation that they have with each other, the credibility or the, in this case, you know, just we're friends, right? So you're going to give me a Pepsi, and I appreciate you thinking of me, Stephen, when you're there at the vending machine. I hope I can get a Diet Pepsi because I don't drink that sugary stuff. But
absolutely, you and I both Diet Pepsis if you're ever buying me one. So yeah.
But that actually puts me in mind of the piece I wrote over on my other blog today, over on Transparency Revolution. I put a piece up called Be Visible, and was talking about the fact that, and this is in my day-to-day business job, not where I am chief futurist and strategy guy, but it's not usually quite as far out as when I'm doing this show. But I actually mentioned WOFI in that piece, talking about the advent of the real emergence of reputation management as a separate set of solutions that this company names.com, NAYMZ.com, they just changed their name last week, and I'm going to be interviewing the founder of the company, Tom Drugin, on the Transparency Revolution podcast on Friday. But they changed their name to visible.me. So this is kind of cutting edge because they're even using a domain that doesn't end with .com, which is kind of edgy. But the whole idea behind reputation management is let's collect all of your public facing information, and yes, let's manage that. Let's make sure that the things that you want visible are the visible ones, that the good stuff's getting out, the things that you want to keep private aren't getting out there, and that you're establishing your credibility, you're establishing your reputation, and that online reputation becomes a huge, huge economic asset for you or liability. And the path from there to reputation actually becoming the form of currency, you know, it's still a big leap, but not nearly as big a leap as it was before we had these ideas. And these ideas are getting more and more entrenched every day. The notion that we kind of are defined by this persona that we've created online, I think, is much more easy to understand than it was even a couple of years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It's and I'm still amazed by the naivete of some people that, some of the things that are posted by, particularly young, you know, people are in college and stuff. That stuff sticks with you, folks. You know, be careful what you put online about yourself. Be careful.
Facebook is forever, folks.
Yeah.
The internet is forever.
What pictures are posted of you, you know, could influence whether you get that job or not. So just, you know, have that in mind. Which I guess brings to this, now that your friends can post pictures of you and tag them, you have to be careful about what friends you make even. So I don't know. It's
it's true. I mean, it's absolutely true. I think that we're moving out of a kind of a rough and tumble, anything goes age of social network into a kind of a more considered, careful age of social networking because of the fact that it's now dawning on us that we're creating this reputation, that we're creating this presence that is seen. And you're right, everybody we interact with has some impact on that. And everything we do, everything we put up there, everything we say, and sometimes the things we don't say all play into that. I think you're right, Stephen. That's one of those scenarios that we really do see unfolding right now. And I think if people are going to pick a future for themselves, one of the things they really need to be aware of is, as important as that may have become over the last couple of years, it's going to be vastly more important 5 years from now, 10 years from now. We're going to be living much more of our lives online than we are now, even though it feels like we're living a lot of for many of us, it feels like we're living a lot of our lives online now. That shift is occurring, and the persona that we're creating there is in many ways not nearly as easy to reinvent as it was out here in the real world a few years ago, because we don't have those erasers that we used to have. The web sees all and knows all and remembers all. So I think that's a really good point. That's a key aspect of planning our futures that I think we need to be aware of. What's our online persona going to be? What's our online reputation going to be?
That's right. That's right. And, don't be a jerk whenever possible. Be the kind of person that encourages others and things like that, because that sticks with you too, the good that you do. And I think that's going to be more and more the case. I think that there are going to be ways that social networks teach us to be better people. I really think I see a very positive future with social networking. I mean, sure, there's a lot of loss of privacy. There's those issues, but I'm very pro social network. I think it's going to be good stuff occurring as a result of that.
I agree with you. I think that actually something I'll be writing in my blog tomorrow on Transparency Revolution, a phrase that popped into my head earlier today, is that you know how in it's the Declaration of Independence, right, where we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
That's right.
Yeah. Those are considered fundamental rights, and we always make note of the fact that we're not guaranteed happiness, we're guaranteed the pursuit of happiness. I think we're going to quickly realize that we don't have a right to privacy, we have the right to the pursuit of privacy, that's about as close as we're ever going to really come, because an actual right to privacy is probably outside of our capability to create. And that's another thing that we really need to be thinking about as we're planning what our future is going to be.
Well, let me tell you about a new augmented reality thing I got from my iPhone this week. It's you take your take my iPhone 4 and I point it at an airliner in the sky, and it tells me what flight number it is. I'm looking at a flying airplane, okay? It tells me what flight number it is, where it's coming from, where it's going, things like that. And my wife is going, why do you care to know that? And I looked at her with this incredulous look, and I say, because I can. It's just
so
awesome.
That's interesting. Are you kidding? Yeah, that's way. I got to get that. Because I'm always looking. I'm always looking up at airplanes and thinking, San Francisco, San Diego.
Yeah, where's Seattle? What's going on with that airplane? Well, and to some extent, a complete right to privacy would be a right to keep information from other people that people really want to know. You know,
right?
So our rights, you know, used to be that we lived very solitary lives and we bumped up into each other, you know, fairly rarely. And so privacy was kind of a big deal. I mean, it was, you know, everyone had it, but they didn't have a lot of knowledge, you know. Now we're all bumping up into each other all the time. And I mean, we live very social lives. And so we give up privacy, but we gain huge amounts of knowledge in exchange. And so, you know, our lives are more open books than the lives of our parents. But that's a small price to pay for the great stuff that we get in exchange.
Absolutely. So choose your future. Go visit there. Test it. Revise it as you need to live to see it. Recognize that it's going to be a social-driven, very different world, very online world with very little privacy. And having said all of that, I'm now going to talk quickly about our World Transform 2 in the moments we have left here. I just want to give a quick update on who we've got signed up, if you think that's a good idea.
Excellent. Please, yes, I want to know.
Okay, so here's who we've got lined up as guests. David Brin, PJ Manny, Alvis Bridges, Aubrey de Grey, Terry Grossman, Gregory Benford, Maria Konovalenko, Christine Peterson, Jay Storrs Hall, George Dvorsky, Sonia Arison, Are You Serious, James Hughes. Oh, I can't even get Google Docs to scroll fast enough to keep up with my reading here. Bruce Katz, Natasha Vita Moore, Vanessa Mimas, Martin Ford, Robin Hansen, Michael Anisimov, Brian Wong, Alexis Bright, John Smart, Carl Schulman, and Tom McCabe. And we've still got outstanding invitations. We expect it to be 30 total guests at the when all is said and done. That's 23. But, man, I read that list, and I am as stoked as I can possibly be. It starts June 29th. We'll be putting up a new site related to the World Transformed. That should be showing up sometime next week. And we'll, of course, be providing more details at The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio. Stephen, what is our excellent music this evening?
Well, I wanted a complete palate cleanser. Phil, are you familiar at all with Hearts of Space music?
Of course, yeah.
You know
what
I'm talking about? Okay.
Yeah, new agey stuff, right? Yeah,
really new agey kind of, you know, it's stuff that you listen to, you know, when you just need to space out for a little while, relax, that kind of thing. I got into it a little bit when I went to college back in 87 and been kind of an on and off fan ever since. And this song would fit right in to a Hearts of Space broadcast. The title of the song is Strange Universe, and the group that put it together was Founda.
Founda
is the name of the band.
Founda playing Strange Universe. Thanks for putting that together for us, Stephen. Thank you, chatters and all live listeners, for being part of Fast Forward Radio. Everyone listening via MP3, we'll be back on Saturday with the World Transformed 1.5. And back on live again 1 week from tonight. Hope you'll be able to join us for all of our upcoming programs. Until next time, live to see it. Thank you.
Thank you.